Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. Good evening, or good afternoon, or good morning, depending upon where in the world you are listening to this from. Hello and welcome to episode one of the Tennis in the UK podcast, where the main focus of this episode will be looking back at the M25 event in Sheffield last week. So last week was the first of a 5-week stint of ITF World Tennis Tour events in the UK. Not the first of those this season. We had an indoor swing of events across January and February, another few weeks outdoors across April and May in Nottingham ahead of the well-publicised grass court season, another block of outdoor events down south across July and August, and now we're back indoors for the next few weeks because if you're in the UK and you haven't noticed, somehow it has been freezing since September 1st, like literally September 1st. Hit September, that was it. Get your coats on. The number of international events staged in the UK at this level, if you listen to my intro episode, you'll have heard this, it is vastly increased since we last had a full competitive calendar in 2019. So that's amazing. And part of the reason this podcast is starting up now, because we do not want events of this quality flying below the radar. Okay, if you're familiar with the tennis scene, then by all means skip the next 30 seconds of this. But for those who are pretty fresh to how tennis operates, the ITF World Tennis Tour stages the 4 Grand Slam events and all entry-level pro events. And these tournaments are named after the amount of prize money on offer for each one. So, an event that offers a $15,000 prize pot as an M15 event for the men and a W15 event for the women, an event that offers a $25,000 prize pot is an M25 event for the men and a W25 event for the women. Then there's a bit of a difference in branding, and the men's events go on to ATP Challenger tournaments ahead of full ATP Tour events where the Novak Djokovic's and Rafael Nadal's of this world compete, and the women have W60, W80, and W100 tournaments before the Iga Swiatek and the Simona Halep realm of WTA Tour events. I hope that made sense. So the majority of these tournaments staged outside of the grass court season within the UK are M25 and W25 tournaments. To review, that's the second step up on the pro circuit. But over the next few weeks, there will be a W60 in Glasgow and a W100 in Shrewsbury. So you can expect one or two members of the women's top 100 to be knocking around, particularly with the Billie Jean King Cup finals taking place in Glasgow next month. For now, there's an M25 event underway in Sunderland, but as I mentioned, we're going to be looking back at last week's M25 tournament in Sheffield, which had British winners across both singles and doubles. It also had a pretty strong draw. Alistair Gray headed it up. His world ranking at the time was number 279, career high 237 achieved last month, alongside 18 Brits in the main draw, 5 of whom qualified. It featured a player who was ranked world number 75 as recently as 2019 in Prajnesh Gunaswaran, and he reached the semi-finals in the singles, along with current Wimbledon boys singles champion Millie Polacek. He is in possession of some serious hand skills, Polacek, very talented player, but so is 20-year-old Arthur Ferry. And it was Arthur Ferry who beat Polacek in the semi-finals and then fellow non-seeded Brit Giles Hussey in the final to claim the second M25 singles trophy of both his season and his career. Ferry was ranked world number 656, and just as he did in Nottingham at the end of July, he beat 3 seeded players on his way to the trophy. Unlike in Nottingham, where he saved championship points on the return against Dan Cox in the final, he didn't drop a set across his 5 matches in Sheffield. So 10 sets played, 10 sets won, and he didn't drop more than 4 games in any one of those sets. So pretty impressive from Ferry's perspective. And I think he planned it very well, Ferry. I've said already that this was the first week of 5 indoor events in the UK, but the week prior to Sheffield, Ferry contested week 6 of the UK Pro League in Aldershot, and you are going to get sick of hearing me talk about the UK Pro League and big it up, but it is also staged indoors, and the format guarantees you 5 matches of tennis. So even though Ferry lost to Anton Matusevic in the semi-finals in Aldershot, he was back out the next day to beat Aziz Kuzmetovic in the third place playoffs. And even though the courts in Aldershot were playing much quicker than the slower courts of Graves Health and Fitness Centre in Sheffield, he certainly wasn't going into his first match in Sheffield cold. And he had a fair amount of time to warm up in the final against Hussey. That first service game of Hussey's lasted 9 minutes in total. As you might expect, in slower conditions with two players who don't mind a long rally and have the repertoires to switch things up on court. But from 3-all in the first set, it felt like Ferry's outrageous foot speeds at the baseline and his options on the ball, particularly on the forehand side when he got to it, they started to wear down Hussey's consistency, and he raced out to an emphatic lead in the second set, Ferry, which was enough to keep the reins in hand, and ultimately he sealed the 6-3, 6-2 win. Okay, rankings. Ferry's current ranking doesn't do justice to his ability because A, the rankings have been trash since COVID first wreaked havoc and with all the Russian-Belarusian drama this season, and B, he's still playing college tennis. He's 2 years down at Stanford University out in the States, and he's postponed going back until January in order to have a real push on the pro circuit right now. At this moment in time, he's still planning to go back in January, as you can hear from him here.
If I keep doing very well in the next 2 months, then maybe my aspirations will change and I'll have to make a decision regarding college. But right now, I think I'm pretty set on going back in January and playing the season with the team. Obviously, I haven't given myself that much time with college before and after, so I've got these kind of next 2 months to keep pushing up the rankings. And now I'm very happy to be able to win my first 2 25s. Hopefully I can win a few more 25s and then progress into the challenges.
So that's added motivation for him to keep racking up these results in record time. He's won his first 2 singles trophies there at this level in less than 3 months. And another player who is racking up results quickly is Giles Hussey, age 25, formerly a college tennis player himself. Ahead of losing to Ferry in the singles final, he also beat 3 seeded players in the singles. They were number 8 seed Carl Freeburg, top seed Ali Gray, and number 3 seed Gunaswaran, all of them in a row. And Ferry was one of his victims on the way to the doubles final, where he and Johannes Munde beat the number 2 seeds and August's Aldershot champions Mark Whitehouse and Eero Vaasa 7-5-6-4 to lift the trophy there. So that was 2 M25 doubles titles in as many weeks for Hussey and Munde, and 2 M25 singles finals in as many months for Giles Hussey. It has been a very good recent run of form for Hussey, who is now up to a career-high world number 547 in the current rankings. So less than an hour after his loss in the singles final, so cruel of me, I got him to discuss why that is, how he came to start playing tennis, why the Brits are doing so well right now, and a load of other stuff, whatever came up. So here's that discussion. Enjoy. Giles Hussey, doubles champion, singles runner-up. If someone had said that to you before this week, would you have taken that? Would you have been happy with that?
I'm not going to turn that down. Obviously, right now I'm sat here having just lost the final of the singles, so a little bit of a bitter taste, but yeah, overall I'm pretty happy with the week. Playing doubles with my college teammate, Johannes Munde, and yeah, I feel like we're clicking now. We've played together the last few weeks. I was in Sweden, and yeah, we won last week and won again this week. So in terms of doubles, I feel very good, and doubles ranking's climbing quite a bit higher than the singles ranking now, which is worrying because I thought I was a singles player. But also a good week for me in singles, so happy.
Yeah, talk about that one a little bit then, because you, as you've said, yourself and Johannes, back-to-back 25 titles, which is obviously very good. Do you see the correlation with playing doubles and singles results improving? Because this is, if I'm correct in thinking, second 25K singles final now?
Yeah, so actually in the last British one, which was at Roehampton, I did the exact same as what I did here. I did a final of singles and one doubles. And I mean, for me, I think it's like a big preference thing. I know there are people that choose not to play doubles and focus on singles because it is tiring. Like, don't get me wrong, I feel pretty knackered having played like double days all week pretty much. But it depends who you are. For me, I'm someone that, like, if I'm hitting a lot of tennis balls and seeing the ball well, then I feel good about myself and play well, and I feel like my fitness is solid enough to where I can play both and do it reasonably well. So yeah, I think for me it's also a case of, if you maybe have a bad week in singles and crash out early, then at least you've got a chance of getting some extra matches in, some extra court time, where some futures it's tough to get on court otherwise, you know.
For sure. Let's talk about this week then specifically in a little bit more detail. So Sheffield Graves Health and Fitness Centre, had you played here before? What was your familiarity with the conditions, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny actually, I've played here once before and it was probably 5 or 6 years ago, and it's changed since then. I think they've added a couple of extra courts and there's a new gym and stuff like that, so it's definitely upgraded since I've last been here. I've enjoyed it, to be honest. I'm someone that likes a slightly slower indoor hard court, if I was going to be picky, and this probably is, as well as the balls being a little bit slower. So yeah, honestly, like the first hit I had here, I had a good feeling. I felt like the lefty swinger was going to work well for me, and it seems to have done all right this week.
Yes, speaking of good feeling, I'm going to throw this one out there again. I left on Wednesday. You said see you on Saturday.
I did.
And I remember actually having a little moment of thinking, well, there's only one match on Saturday. It's the singles final. And here you were on Saturday. But since then, you've beaten the top seed. You've beaten the number 3 seed. I think that day, you'd beaten the number 8 seed on that particular day, who you'd lost your last two singles matches to in the previous 2 weeks. Did you have, like, a confidence going into those matches against Alistair Gray, against Gunnar Swaren, that you were going to win the match?
I felt good. Like I said, when I first got here, I felt like the conditions suited me pretty well. Then actually my first round, I came through a tough one against a lower ranked player, but someone I have struggled against in the past.
Do you want to name him?
Sean. That's you, Sean.
Sean Hodkin. Shout out. Okay, carry on.
but yeah, scraped through that one. Had a long battle with him. But then I also think sometimes that, like, coming through a tough one early in a tournament, like, you get, like I said, you get some time on court and maybe hit a few more balls than you would have liked to. But it seemed to help. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, in second round, I played a guy that I'd lost to a few times. And obviously, I'd lost to him a few times, so I came on court and thought, I have to do something different. So came out, tried to be much more aggressive, and played one of the best matches I can remember myself playing. So then I thought, right, well, I'm just going to play that way for the rest of the tournament, however many matches it may be. I did. I felt confident. I've never played, actually, that's a lie, I have played Ali Gray once, but it was maybe 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. Like
under 12's job, I think.
So you don't remember that, or you do?
No, he got the better of me.
Oh, okay. You choose to shut that one from the memory. Fair play.
And then, obviously, I didn't know Gunnar Swaren, the number 3 seed, but after beating Ali, who was the top seed, then I felt good about my chances, and just felt good about my game, really. I wasn't too worried about what I was facing from the other side of the net, but more just focusing on myself.
You have a lot of fight on court. I heard you at one point today, I think you were 5-1 down maybe in the second set, and you were telling yourself, compete. Yeah. That kind of inner fight, is that something you've always had? Is that something that you've worked on?
I think it's something that I've always had a little bit, and I think I'll give a little shout out to college tennis here. I think that's maybe where a big part of my competitive spirit comes from. In college tennis, you kind of have to be loud and have to be vocal and passionate. So I am that on court, sometimes maybe to a fault. But I'm passionate, and yeah, I think that's where I'd probably have to put that down to college atmosphere that's brought that out in me a bit more.
I like that you've mentioned college, because I was going to touch on that. So you went to two different colleges in the States. You went to, you name them for me so I don't get them wrong.
Georgia State University, shout out. Yeah.
Okay, and the second one?
And the University of Tennessee.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. And you finished there last year, middle of last year?
Yeah.
Okay, and then from there, I mean, the first time I saw you was the UK Pro League in week 7 last season in September. But I think you'd already played a few ITFs since coming back.
Yeah.
So how did you find making that transition from college to going full-time on the tour? Was that a bit of a culture shock? What were the pressures like? What was the atmosphere when you made that move?
It was a bit of a shock. Like, obviously, it's very different going from college, where you've got, you know, it's like so many people in your corner. You've got your coaches, your teammates, your physios, your trainers. Like, everything's planned out for you. And I would say you're a lot less independent. And then suddenly you're thrown into futures tennis, which you have to do everything. You have to book your courts, you have to get your practice balls. So it was a bit of a shock, but as you mentioned, I played at two different universities and actually was out there for 6 years. So
a fair while,
and I felt like I was mature enough at least to like make the step. And like maybe I should have done it a year or so before, but I took the opportunity while I had it to stay in college, and I think I was like ready to go on the tour when I did.
So having kind of referred to that maturity, I guess, were you expecting to progress this quickly in terms of this time last year you were mainly competing at 15k level, and now you're very much up there competing for 25s?
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's felt like slow progress at times. Like, I mean, that's tennis, though. You have good weeks and bad weeks. But looking back on it as a whole, I've been happy with my progress. I've met most of my goals in terms of rankings and stuff. And I feel like, particularly over the last few months, like my actual game has started to come together a little bit more.
I was going to say, can you see kind of a biggest difference of Giles Hussey this time last year compared to Giles Hussey now?
Yeah, it's funny, because I was having a chat with Johannes, who I mentioned yesterday or the day before, and he asked me, have I improved more in my time since leaving college, or did I improve more in my time in college? And I thought about it for a while, but I think I've added more to my game since leaving college. And I think also the maturity of, like I said, having to do things on your own helps a lot. It takes a bit of getting used to, but I think long term it's a good thing. And obviously, like, that's what professional tennis is. Like, you spend a lot of time on your own. It's been good. It's been a tough but good transition, and it's heading the right direction, I think. It's trending upwards.
It would seem so, based on recent results. So, for a moment, let's go way back, because I figure that a lot of people might not know how you came to the sport in the first place.
Yep.
What are your earliest memories of tennis? And was there anyone in your family interested in it? That kind of thing.
Yeah, my family's actually not a big tennis family. They're more into their horses.
Oh, really?
So I was originally put on a horse, but there's some of my youngest pictures are of me crying or looking miserable on a horse. So that didn't last long.
Was that to do with where you lived? Or?
Yeah, my dad's a farmer.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, growing up on a farm, lots of livestock and animals around.
Right.
In particular, horses. But I was always more interested in either a racket or a quad bike. But yeah, I was
either
lucky
or
enough.
Not both at the same time.
I haven't tried both at the same time.
Okay.
Actually. But yeah, so I was actually lucky enough to have a court at home growing up, red nice. Clay court, which is pretty rare. But so I just used to, like, other people from our village used to come and have lessons on our court with a coach that would come. And whenever someone didn't turn up, I would, as a four-year-old, go on court and he would put the racket in my hand and feed me some, like, some balls to hit. And I guess that's where it started, really. And then after that, I played a lot of different sports. I was always pretty keen on football and athletics and stuff like that, but it wasn't until age 11 I went to boarding school at Millfield School.
Okay.
And then I took it a little bit more seriously then, I'd say.
So when you went to boarding school, yeah. that wasn't sports specific, that was just for the sake of school?
It was sports specific.
Okay.
By that point, I'd kind of realised that I wanted to be sporty, and in particular was tennis.
Right.
So... yeah, that was the purpose behind going there, really. And yeah, I loved it. For anyone listening, shout out to Millfield, I would recommend. It was a great time. Obviously, it was young to like kind of leave home. Age 11 is very young.
Sure.
Especially now looking back on it, I'm like, wow, I really did that. But yeah, I loved it. You're living with a group of your mates instead of your sisters that you fight with, so yeah,
older or younger sisters?
Older, both older.
Yeah. Okay, and still fighting for yeah. sure. They instigated it, I'm sure. Sure. Is there any kind of standout memory from your time at boarding school where it kind of started to come together for you, or you kind of knew for a fact that this is what I want to do long term?
I feel like as a kid who plays a sport, you always have dreams of being a professional athlete, you know? Or at least for me, that was the case. But I wasn't a brilliant junior. I'll be the first to put that out there.
Okay.
And it was not until really probably my last couple of years of school, like 16, 17, that I started to improve quite a bit. We had... a new head of tennis came in at Millfield, and a couple of new coaches came in and kind of turned the program around. And yeah, from there, like, it was a really good setup, and there were some good players in, so I felt like those couple of years I kind of progressed on a little bit, and then decided I wanted to go to college, and everything kind of happened from there, I guess. Yeah,
for sure. I'm going to double back a moment. You mentioned that the court at your house was a red clay court.
Yeah.
Do you think that helped shape your game style?
Oh, good question. Potentially. I'm a lefty, so and have a fairly spinny forehand, I would say. So potentially it did. I've never really thought about that before, but I think, like, sometimes, yeah, whatever you grow up playing on, maybe that, you know, it becomes your natural swing, and my natural swing, yeah, is quite spinny, so maybe that's the secret behind it. Yeah.
There you go. I mean, it suited the courts here in Sheffield pretty well, and you've shown your ability to transfer across surfaces and conditions as well. Not just you, but other Brits. It's quite a theme at the moment. I've felt this year in particular, not just in the UK, but elsewhere, a lot of Brits at this level, 25Ks, pushing through, winning titles, making finals. I mean, here in the UK, I mean, we can name a few. So Arthur Ferry just won number two
yeah.
today. Sorry to remind you.
Yeah,
Toby Samuels won one. We've had the, like, Stuart Parker's made final. Billy Harris won titles. We can go on and on.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that there's a reason it's happening for all the Brits? Can you point to why the success is happening among them right now?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a reason, and here I'll give some praise to the LTA, because yeah, it's been quite a long time where we haven't had many events at home, and it means people have to travel, and for everyone that's not possible, you know. And now this year we've got, I think, 15 futures events, something like that, which is huge, because yeah, it means that all these players that you've just mentioned can play in their home country and drive to tournaments and have a chance to be more accustomed with the courts. And I think that's a huge reason as to why British players are doing really well, better than they have for a long time, and continuing to like move up the rankings, I think is really good, as well as obviously the incentives that they've put out with bonuses and stuff like that. It definitely helps motivate and incentivize people to keep pushing on, I would say.
For sure. Yeah. When you're at tournaments like this, I mean, let's look at Sheffield this week. We had former world number 75 in the draw, current junior Wimbledon champion.
Yeah.
We had a lot of strong international players here, and at the end of the day, it was still two British non-seeders in the final. Do you feel the home advantage during the week, and do you think the other players feel the lack of that? Can you sense that?
I can only speak for myself, really, but I actually was chatting to one of my friends yesterday and said, yeah, I really enjoy playing in the UK because I've got my car, you can drive around, you can take maybe more stuff than you would normally, you can do things more easily in your free time, as well as like familiarity with restaurants and supermarkets and stuff like that. I don't know, it's nice just to be in your comfort zone a little bit when you can be, I can't complain. It's nice to be playing tournaments at home, as well as having the home support, you know. There's not always loads of it at futures level, but where there is, it's nice to have it, definitely.
I'm going to ask, I think I'll keep bringing this question up because I'm interested to hear different opinions. Obviously, the further up the rankings ladder you go, the slimmer the margins become.
Yeah.
At this level that you're competing at the moment, 25Ks, what do you think gives you the edge? What do you think has given you the edge in previous weeks when you've had these good results?
Yeah, good question. I think a big part of it in futures is mentality. I think obviously, as you mentioned, the ranking gaps, it gets tougher and tougher to move up the higher you go, obviously, but I think futures tennis in particular, you just can win matches from being tougher than your opponent, and I think that's something that although I haven't played many challenges yet, I think that's something that if I can make that step up, that's something I'll realise, is everyone is very switched on all the time and very professional, and I think that's something that if you're disciplined in futures and you look after your body and get the right sleep and nutrition, then I think that can take you a long way, actually. Yeah,
I've noticed just from being around the British players, obviously through UK Pro League and events here, you genuinely love tennis, right? You love the sport. Stats man, knows his history, knows his facts. Do you think that kind of thing further down the line, do you expect that to maybe give you an edge?
I think it's definitely helped me get to where I am. As you mentioned, I love the sport. I'm always happy to talk tennis and talk stats and facts and scores, and I could reel off, you know, my scores and my stats from matches from years ago. That's
Go.
Just who I am. Don't get me started.
I won't. Carry on.
But yeah, no, I think it's definitely given me advantage. Actually, the coach I mentioned who took over at Millfield School always said that she thought I would be out of the group of us that was playing at school. She thought I would be the last one still playing because I loved it the most.
Wow.
And she's right. Everyone else has pretty much given up, I think. But I'm still battling away. I think it's good. I think it's important to love what you do, because then it doesn't feel like a job as much. I am passionate about it, and I mean, also, I think that's something I'll never lose. Like, at the moment, if tennis as a professional career doesn't work out, then I'd love to work in the sport somehow, but we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, there are options out there.
Yeah, as you know.
As I do know, yes. Looking ahead very briefly then. So the... No, first of all, let's say goals. Have goals shifted for you with the kind of results that you've been having over the last few weeks? Short term, I mean, long term, we know that, I guess, goals are quite similar for most players. But go on, short term and long term goals.
I set ranking goals at the start of the year. And actually didn't play the first 4 months. I was injured. I kind of readjusted or thought that they were a little bit unrealistic, but I'm getting towards reaching them, which one of them was to break into the top 500 and of singles. And I am edging my way there. I think I'm going to sneak in for a week and then I drop some points, so I'll drop back out. But
are you watching your ranking every week?
Like I said, I'm the stats guy, so I need to know that stuff.
Does that add pressure, take it away?
I don't mind it. I'm a bit of a weirdo in terms of I always look at my odds, my pre-match odds and stuff like that, which a lot of people hate. I know they hate. But that stuff, I don't know. My brain just needs to know it. I am checking my rankings, yeah, I'm keeping tabs on it. But ultimately, I think what I've realised over the last couple of months is that if I do the right things and play the right way and train the right way, then, I mean, at the end of the day, the ranking will take care of itself. If I get the results, then obviously, yeah, the ranking will move as to how I'm playing in the long term.
Absolutely. And so next few weeks then, I'm assuming that you're playing the next couple of ITFs here in the UK, or is that wrong?
Yeah, I am. So I'm heading up from here, from Sheffield to Sunderland, and hopefully we'll try and have another good week up there. And then I'm planning to play Glasgow, but we'll see. This is my third week in a row, so next week will be four in a row. So we'll see how the body's feeling.
A lot of tennis with singles and doubles.
A lot of tennis, yeah, a lot of tennis, but we love it.
Yeah, so. That's the way he likes it. Before we wrap, and this might have been a bit all over the place because I announced this interview about 20 minutes before it happens.
Thanks for the heads
up. It's very impromptu. We've just been chatting it through. But UK Pro League, you know my obsession with UK Pro League because I work on it, I commentate for it, and I've kind of been there since day one. And you've been there from... quite early on, I guess, a second year of it, you came out of college. And do you think the transition would have been tougher without that? How do you think UK Pro League has played a part in where you're at right now?
Yeah, I actually think it's been huge. I haven't been able to play many events this year through injury and scheduling and stuff. It just hasn't quite worked out. But I was lucky enough to play a few last year, and... yeah, it was kind of... I was recently out of college and had picked up a couple of ATP points, but hadn't done much at the time. And yeah, I managed to play a pro league and it was based at my home venue at Bath, and I played great there. Actually, I ended up winning it, which at the time was a huge result for me, and that kind of... I don't know, I'd beaten a couple of players there that had won futures or made runs at futures, and that for me was the eye-opener without having done it myself, of like, oh, I can actually play at this level, as well as making a good bit of cash at these pro leagues, which always helps for the British players. I only have good things to say about the pro league. I think it's great for British players. I think it's great for fans. It's nice to have it like properly televised, and you know, it's a proper event. I'll definitely try and catch some of the last few this year, and if not, then hopefully I'll make more next year.
That entire response was the correct answer.
Yeah.
Congrats. We do love Pro League. Well done this week, Giles.
Thank you.
Another really strong draw here, I felt, and to keep it going across singles and doubles with the amount of tennis that you've played is no mean feat. So hopefully your body holds up for the next couple of weeks, and I'm sure we'll see you somewhere else down the road.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I look forward to lots more trivia on the way.
That's what everyone comes for.
Yeah.
Many thanks to Giles for agreeing to be the guinea pig of this podcast. His words, not mine. Genuinely, neither of us had much clue what was going to come up in discussion there, so it turned out to be nicely insightful. And it brings us to the end of this week's podcast, so thank you for listening. The aim is to have an episode out every Tuesday, so come back next week to hear about the M25 in Sunderland, mostly. Nearly said it wrong there, nearly said Sheffield. And in the meantime, you can follow tennis in the UK on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK and on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK. So that's three underscores. If you're struggling to remember it, that's the same number of tiebreaks that Novak Djokovic won in the 2019 Wimbledon final. So now you know and won't forget. Okay, I'm out. Thank you for listening. See you back here next week. Take care. We'll be right back.